Hello, I'm Dr. David Johnson, Professor of Medicine and Chief of Gastroenterology at Eastern Virginia Medical School in Norfolk, Virginia, and welcome back to another computer consult. Well, I've just finished editing a book on the human microbiome and health and disease, so I wanted to spend a couple of the next series of computer consults trying to share with you what I've learned in a very provocative way of looking at the human microbiome as an adjunct, if not a primary treatment, for a variety of different diseases. Well, it's well known that the gut serves as the largest immune system in the body, and recently it's been the focus of the crosslink between gut immunogenicity and the host microbiome, and the subsequent effect that this may have on a broad range of disease activities. Today I wanted to talk about how the diet may influence some of this, and put in your mind at least dietary modifications may have a profound effect, if not at least an adjunctive effect, on a variety of diseases. We know that genetic and environmental and dietary factors have specific effects on the microbiome profiles. And we know from animal studies and germ-free mice that the gut can be humanized with human gut flora, demonstrating that subsequent switching from a plant-based to a Western-based high-fat diet and sugar diet caused distinct shifts in the gut microbiome. And this actually occurs very rapidly within one day. That actually has been shown subsequently actually in the humans as well. So the transformation of the gut microbiome can occur by dietary effect within one day. And the bacteria flora now, it becomes a prominent question of how much of a role does it play in systemic diseases rather than just in the day-to-day processing of the food groups that we eat. So in addition, there's been a recognition that selected dietary intake may favorably increase the human microbiome by what's called a prebiotic effect. So prebiotics refer to a general term as chemicals that induce the growth and or the activity of commensal microorganisms. And this may be bacteria or fungi, and they contribute then to the well-being of their host. And the most common example is in the GI tract, where prebiotics can alter the distribution of the organisms in the gut microbiome. And a prebiotic then confers benefits upon the host with well-being and health, and doesn't necessarily emphasize one bacterial group over another, but can. So let's look at a couple of models where the microbiome may have a much more prominent role than we've thought to date. The first comes to mind is in cancer. And the majority of the diversity in our microbiome is in the colon, and there's been very recent number of studies that have linked certain pathogenic bacteria in the development of colorectal cancer. And the current thought is that select microbiomes can mediate a chronic inflammatory environment, which contributes to the progression of colorectal cancer. If we look at the incidence of cancer in areas like in Africa, where in rural native Africans compared to African Americans, it's been attributed to a higher amount of undigestible polysaccharides in the diet. And a particular interest then is the focus of the diet and the metabolome on the adenocarcinoma sequence. So undigested polysaccharides passing into the gut, namely dietary fiber, are metabolized by the microbiome into short-chain fatty acids, which are then converted into acetate, propionate, and butyrate. The latter two actually inhibit intracellular histone deacetylases, and these downregulate the pro-inflammatory cytokines, particularly interleukin 6 and 12, and these induce differentiation of T cells into regulatory T cells. And what have I just said? Well, this all leads to a decrease in the inflammatory mediators in the colon. So it's thought that the individual's diet and unique microbiome are thought to influence the pro-inflammatory state of the colon via both immunologic and metabolite-mediated mechanisms. So this can potentially contribute to the progression of the adenocarcinoma sequence for what we see in colon cancer. So again, the bottom line here is fiber, 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 good for colon cancer prevention. Now, a high-fat diet has also been shown to promote small bowel cancers through specific microbiomes and looking at mouse studies where the mice are fed high-fat diet, and they were able to demonstrate an accelerated, in the KRAS expression mouse model, an acceleration to small bowel cancer. Now, interestingly, when they took these high-fat KRAS expression mice and they transformed the fecal transplant, they put a fecal transplant from the KRAS high-fat diet into healthy KRAS mice, they were actually able to induce those mice to actually also have small bowel cancer, but they were able to prevent that by induction with antibiotics. So again, transforming the microbiome here by antibiotics in these mice actually decreased their cancer risk. Now, outside the GI tract, the diet, the microbiome are postulated to influence also the course of breast cancer, very prevalent, 7%, 1 in 7 women are at risk for breast cancer, at least in the U.S., and this is thought to be through bacterial-mediated metabolism of estrogen and the microbiome-dependent maturation of T cells. And clearly, there are abundant short-chain fatty acids in a high-fiber diet that increase a number of bacteria that are actually helpful. This is Firmicutes and Bacteroides in the gut microbiome. And actually, these microbiomes metabolize ligands in the diet into potent photoestrogens. And these have been shown to inversely affect the risk for breast cancer. Now, in contrast, estrogen is a major hormonal growth promoter of breast cancer, and it's conjugated in the liver and secreted in the bile. The microbiome, though, is capable of deconjugating this estrogen and increasing the estrogen reabsorption that can increase the risk of breast cancer. So again, it comes back to fiber, 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 low-fat diet, breast cancer risk may be diminished. How about inflammatory bowel disease? Well, there's been a growing influence of focus of attention here that dietary influences on inflammatory bowel disease may have a significant effect. The causal relationship is still somewhat unclear, but if you take the mouse model again and look at mice deficient in interleukin-10, which is an anti-inflammatory cytokine, they develop spontaneous colitis, and this is due to a T-cell helper cell activation. But this colitis is actually prevented when the mice are reared in a germ-free environment, which eliminates the role of the gut microbiome. And when these mice are then exposed to specific gut flora, they actually can have the reinduction of colitis. So again, suggesting an important role for the microbiome. And when you then feed these mice with high-fat diet, you can actually induce small intestinal inflammation. And this, again, would play out to our patients with Crohn's disease, where they actually demonstrate a decrease in certain bacteria, in particular in Bacteroides and Firmicutes. And these are then reversed with reversal with antibiotics. So why we use our antibiotics in our Crohn's patient may make more sense, again, in shifting the microbiome. Now, we do know, too, that short-chain fatty acids have an immunomodulatory effect that decrease the amount of certain inflammatory cytokines. And this, again, plays out in patients with colitis, at least in the mouse model, with colitis. We know that the two far more recent data has emerged that the dietary effects of what's called the aryl hydrocarbon receptor, AHRR, which functions as an anti-inflammatory and detoxification pathway in the gut. And there are a variety of exogenous AHRR ligands that range from fruits and vegetables, such as broccoli, to bacterial metabolites. And these are AHR have been shown to be downregulated in the intestinal biopsies of patients with inflammatory bowel disease, while incubation of the biopsies with the AHR agonists actually induced interleukin IL-22 production. So again, suggesting that the induction of AHR by dietary means may have a profound effect. In fact, in the murine model, if you have AHR deficiency, you have disrupted intraepithelial lymphocytes, and this caused increased immune cell activation and mucosal epithelial damage. So again, they could tie this to a bacterial increase, in particular in Bacteroides. Profound effects, again, driven by the microbiome and influenced by potentially the diet. Additionally, another indirect dietary source for these AHR ligands is tryptophan, which is found in vegetables and fish. And there's evidence that tryptophan is metabolized in the gut by gut lactobacillus to an AHR ligand. And activation here, again, alters the microbiome in ways that enhances the mucosal inflammatory protection and resistance against bacterial translocation. So this whole idea of inflammatory bowel disease, what do I tell my patients now? I say vegetables and fish. We certainly think that there's a role for this. Again, this AHR may be real, so maybe we are what we eat. Finally, our next to last, I wanted to talk about a little bit about the metabolic syndrome and the obesity epidemic. We know truly that in mice, the transfer of the gut microbiome in genetically obese mice to germ-free mice can increase those mice, their body mass index very quickly. So it's suggesting that the gut microflora can dictate the phenotype of obesity in a transmissible fashion. And we do know that there are bacterial degradation of certain undigestible polysaccharides, and it's crucial to the generation of short-chain fatty acids and metabolites. And these metabolites regulate gut hormones that control satiety by binding to free fatty acid receptors, in particular free fatty acid 2 and free fatty acid 3 receptors, and that these are responsive to gut microbiome manipulation. Very interesting data that talks to the use of artificial sweeteners really creates a shot across the bow of the rationale on this, but these use of the artificial sweeteners can actually induce glucose intolerance via alterations in the gut microbiome. This has been shown now both in mice and humans, and the non-genetically altered mice, both lean and high-fat diet groups, develop marked glucose intolerance compared to controls after consuming a variety of non-artificial sweeteners. And treatment with antibiotics eliminated this. So again, it does fulfill the Koch's postulate of causality and reversal by the here and now the antibiotics. And this again has been very notable with a shift in the microbiome, in particular an overrepresentation here of Bacteroides species. So the idea of the use of artificial sweeteners in patients that may have a proclivity towards diabetes, or in our diabetic patients that may be taking these as an adjunct to decrease glucose absorption, may be actually paradoxic here as we select out the gut microbiome in an adverse way. Additionally, the data now on non-alcoholic fatty liver disease is really turning to a potential for microbiome at least manipulation as a target. We do know that there are a variety of things that are manifest in the gut that are at least associated with non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, and certain diet inductions of non-alcoholic fatty liver disease have been evident with particularly methacholine and choline deficient diets, and these are reversible when these mice are fed with antibiotics. So again, we're finding that the upregulation of cytokines may be induced by certain diets, and in particular in this population, low-fat diet seems to be a potential positive effect. So what do I tell my non-alcoholic fatty liver disease? Obviously lose weight and particularly diabetic control, but it's really critical in these patients, at least from what we see from the animal models, that low-fat diet is important. The final one, the two areas that I wanted to talk about, one was atherosclerosis, because the traditional high-fat, low-fiber Western diet has been linked to multiple inflammatory diseases outside the GI tract. And it's well known that the high-fat diet is a significant risk factor for atherosclerosis. And there are a variety of things that have been postulated to tie these together. We do know that phosphatidylcholine metabolites produced by the gut microbiome promote cardiovascular disease. And foods rich in this phosphatidylcholine include eggs, milk, liver, red meat, poultry, shellfish, and fish. And there have been identifiable links to subsequently exposed myocardial infarction patients and the presence of what's called trimethylamine N-oxide, or TMAO, as a significant risk factor. And we do know that this phosphatidylcholine is converted to trimethylamine, or TMA, by the gut microflora, and this is then metabolized to the trimethylamine N-oxide, or the TMAO. And these are evident in patients that have cardiovascular disease. So as an indirect biomarker, we do know that we can tie a diet influence to a specific marker that is associated with cardiovascular disease. And treatment with antibiotics, when they've done this on a human level, show that you can decrease this TMAO activation. So again, a predictor for cardiovascular events influenced by antibiotics where you change the microflora makes sense. Additionally, compared to a Western diet, the Mediterranean diet, which is particularly low in red meat consumption, is also known to decrease the risk for cardiovascular disease. And along the same TMAO pathway, the gut floral metabolism of L-carnitine, which is an abundant nutrient in red meat, produced that TMAO accelerated atherosclerosis in both mice and humans. And we do know that L-carnitine is a type of TMA that's converted again to this TMAO by the gut microbiome. And this is increased by what we see as an expression of certain bacteria in the gut. And there are a variety of studies now that have looked at this. So from the atherosclerosis side, again, mediating a push towards the Mediterranean diet, low in the production of these TMAOs. Again, there's a high rationale that we should focus on diet. And then the final area that I wanted to talk to, again, talking about the gut as the immune system of the body, is the autoinflammatory diseases, in particular here with asthma. And in the last several decades, there's been a dramatic increase in chronic inflammatory diseases such as asthma and allergies. In particular, there is a very striking tie here as we start to look at asthma, that there is a potential for gut immunoregulation. Recent studies have shown that there's been an identified dysbiosis in both the gut and the pulmonary microbiome in asthma, and subsequent bacterial induction palliates these symptoms. So by shifting the microbiome in these patients, there's been evidence of disease improvement. And the idea here is that dietary fiber increased short-chain fatty acid production and shifting to a certain subspecies of Bacteroides, and this may actually decrease the activation of antigens, which are promoting this upregulation of asthma. So this diet in the asthma patient may be very much in benefit to shift to a low-fat diet, and again, shifting this microbiome and bacterial balance has been shown to have a significant potential benefit. Interestingly, when this has been done in the asthma patients, they've actually analyzed the tight junctions and found that bacterial translocation was enhanced more in the high-fat diet, again suggesting this translocation upregulates the immunogenicity, and again, in the asthma patients, has a profound effect. So low-fat, 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 high-fiber, even in the asthma patients. So where are we in this whole idea? Well, what I wanted to do was not give you answers to questions, but open the door of looking at the diet and the influence on the gut microbiome. Think way outside the box. We treat these diseases very commonly with medications. We need to do a timeout, and we need to start talking about what are we doing with the diet as a potential adjunct, if not primary treatment, for a lot of the diseases way outside of what we would do with just normal statins for atherosclerotic patients or TNF inhibitors for our IBD patients, and looking at the ways that we potentially can be a lot more comprehensive in the way we look at these disease states and modifications just beyond medications. Hoping this has opened the door for lots of questions. If you're a patient, ask your doctor. If you're a doctor or a care provider, start looking at the data, and I'll attach some interesting references that hopefully open the doors for more questions and ways that dietary influences and the microbiome may be an adjunctive means to treating systemic disease. I'm Dr. David Johnson. Look forward to chatting with you again next time on Computer Consult. Again, thanks for listening.